Welcome to this episode of My Journey as a Physicist. Each episode features an interview with a physicist to learn about their work, their interests outside of physics, and their professional journey of how they ended up where they are today. Season 3 features physicists involved in the long-range plan for nuclear science. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. So I'm here with Xiaoqiao Zheng, and could you introduce yourself? Just tell us about yourself, your research, teaching, and what a typical day looks like.
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity. I am from University of Virginia. I'm an experimental nuclear and particle physicist. I do my research at Jefferson Lab, and I used mostly electron scattering to study the structure of the nucleon and the fundamental symmetries. And a typical day varies from academic year to the summer. Obviously, in the summer, I do full-time research. During the academic year, it also varies from day to day, depends on my teaching schedule. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, for example, those are my teaching days. I typically spend at least an hour in the morning to prepare lectures, and the night before also prepare the lectures. And then I teach my lecture in the middle of the day, and then I will have teaching office hours. If there are no students around, I will use those office hours to type up lecture notes or record videos, just like what we're doing now. And I could also post grades and post Zoom recordings of the lectures. So those are my teaching days. And I may even have a research meeting at the end of the day. But most of the Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays are teaching, and Tuesday and Thursdays are mostly research. And on Tuesday and Thursdays, I typically have Zoom research meetings with my group members or collaborations. And I have anywhere between 3 to 5 research meetings throughout the day. And hopefully, I could also have some time for myself as well to actually do the research.
It sounds a little bit busy, but sounds fun. And so this season of the podcast, we're focusing on those who are working on the long-range plan for nuclear science. Could you tell us a little bit about what your part in the long-range plan is?
I would like to start from the time when I first joined UVA. So I joined UVA as a faculty member in 2006. And in the first couple of years, I wasn't really aware of the long-range plan. But then in 2009, when I needed to write my grant proposal renewal, I had to build up a larger research program. And that was not long after the 2007 long-range plan came out. And I found it a very useful information. So thinking about that, if the long-range plan is to provide direction of where the whole nuclear science field should go, then that is probably something I should follow, right? So in fact, I read the whole thing. And I will read the whole long-range plan. I choose the physics topics that I can do and that I'm interested in. And then I build up my research program around it. So that was in 2009. And then in 2015, another long-range plan came out. So that was another time that I followed it. For me, it was almost like a Bible, you know, it's the Bible of research that I should follow all the time. And I was never really involved in the making of the long-range plan until this year. So this time, I joined the long-range plan from the beginning. I'm one of the 4 conveners for the QCD town hall meeting that was held at MIT in September. We were very busy, but at least the town hall meeting is done. And now we are writing the QCD white paper. I'm also on the writing committee for the long-range plan, which will happen sometime next year in 2023. I will be busy, but it is a good sense of busy, and it will be a great learning experience for me as well.
Could you tell us a little bit more about the town hall that you were a part of?
Sure. So yes, there were a total of 3 town hall meetings, and the QCD town meeting was the first one. We had to prepare the town meeting within about 5 or 6 weeks of time from start to finish, and we have 4 conveners. So we had to put together our organizing committee very quickly and came up with a program and inviting the speakers and posting the agenda, etc. I would say it went really well, and we had recommendations and the initiatives came out of the town meeting, and everyone filled out the survey so that we can see which recommendation had unanimous support and which ones do not. Mostly these are initiatives, because initiatives are fairly new topics and the opinion from the community can vary. But the town meeting was a very good forum, I would say, or opportunity for everyone to speak up and express their opinion about what they are thinking of the initiatives and the recommendations. So it is very informative and very useful.
Could you maybe even go into a little bit more detail about, you know, what all these initiatives and stuff that, you know, maybe people do like and don't like are?
Maybe I should just speak about the recommendations. So recommendations are what we recommend, where the program of QCD research should go, and where the funding should be investing in. Before the town meeting, we already had a draft recommendations and initiatives based on our understanding of where the field is. Even so, we learned a great deal during the open discussions at the meeting about how the whole community is thinking. Well, perhaps I can say this, say something about the recommendations already, because the final results of the survey, as well as the list of the recommendations, are already posted online. So the first recommendation is to support or facility operations. So that will include electron scattering program at Jefferson Lab with the 12 GV beam, and also include completing the running of the rig facility, so that will be at the Brookhaven National Lab before the preparation for the electron ion collider. It also includes other smaller programs or individual groups that are doing research at other places, such as Fermilab, Large Hadron Collider, and some smaller facilities. So this is quite understandable, because full operation, it should be our highest priority, right? We should support the running of all these existing facilities. That is where we invested in the past 1 or 2 decades, and we need to make sure the scientific achievements meet our investment in that area. And the second recommendation is the construction of the electron ion collider and its first detector called EPIC. And that is also understandable, because the electron ion collider is sort of like the future of QTD research in the United States. The idea is that both community at RIC, Brookhaven National Lab, and Jefferson Lab will be working together on the electron ion collider and try to make it happen within the next decade. Then the third and the fourth recommendations are about workforce and computing. So computing, that is also understandable, because as we know that as we progress in science and in scientific research, the amount of data that came out just become huge, and they increase by the day. So one experiment these days, we collect a lot more data than an experiment that happened 1 or 2 decades ago. And the same thing can be said for simulation. So to process all of this data and to be able to run the simulations to compare the data with, the need for the computing resources is enormous. And that is the third recommendation. Sorry, that is actually the fourth. Computing turned out to be the fourth recommendation we have. So the third recommendation is actually about building the workforce. So we need a younger generation at some point to take over from us and to run the electron ion collider and perhaps some other future facilities. So we really need to start building this workforce towards the future and make it also diverse and inclusive.
So my question is, you know, after hearing about all this long range plan stuff, it sounds, you know, very important. Like you said, it was the Bible to you early on in your research career. What can, you know, younger researchers do to, you know, be a part of this and, really understand and be a part of what's going on with the long-range plan?
I would think that for now, the younger researchers can participate in all the town hall meetings. We still have two more that will happen in November and December this year. And express your opinion about the physics. And if there is a survey or a vote of the recommendations, participate in that as well. And all the town hall meeting participants are going to also participate in the writing of the white paper, one way or another. It will be great if everyone can read our draft white paper and provide inputs. So that will be an active participation. And that's already better than what I did, because all I did prior to this year was to read the outcome, sort of, you know, take that as a guidance.
Yeah. That's definitely interesting. And maybe just a clarifying question, because we hope to get, you know, younger students listening to this podcast. What exactly is a white paper, you know, and what all goes into it, and what's the goal of it?
Interestingly, the other day, I actually have to Google what white paper means, because white paper is not exactly the same as journal publication that is based on analysis of existing data or projection of what we can do with the future facilities. So a white paper, generally speaking, is a description of the physics that we do, how important it is, what it implies in terms of our understanding of fundamental theories of QCD, for example. The main goal is to provide inputs to a process such as the long-range plan. And through the process, the white paper also provides inputs to funding agencies, for example. In my understanding, that is what white paper means.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear that, you know, even researchers who've been in the field for a while sometimes have to remind themselves what exactly is going on. I guess we're not as lost as young students or young researchers as we think. So I think you've answered a lot of questions about the long-range plan and you're part of it. Maybe to move over to the more personal side of things and showing that you're a human being and not just a physics robot. When and how did you decide to become a physicist?
When I first entered college, I told my parents I wanted to do math and physics. And my dad, who was a professor of electrical engineering, told me that math and physics are not useful. He suggested me to do computer science, electrical engineering, or in the worst case, engineering physics. So I picked engineering physics, which is sort of a like a middle ground between what he wanted me to do and what I wanted to do. And so I spent 5 years to get an engineering degree. And then I wanted to pursue a PhD, but I needed some time to prepare for TOEFL and GRE, those English exams, because I was in China. So I went to physics department and got a degree in physics, which is a master's degree, master of science. So even at that moment, I wasn't sure what I should do because I basically had a degree in both. I do have to say that in my 5 years of engineering physics education, I found physics to be the most interesting. Physics courses like quantum mechanics are what I would say, I can say I survived the whole semester. I feel I understood nothing. To me, that is why physics can be attractive, because if you understand fully something, it's no longer intriguing in some sense. And for the moment I decided to do physics was when I was trying to apply for PhD program. I applied for both electrical engineering and physics. But at the end, I got an admission letter from MIT. I said, I don't care what field they offer me. I wanted to go to MIT. So they offered me admission to the PhD program in physics. So I decided to do physics. And of course, if you do a PhD in physics, you are a physicist forever.
That's really awesome. I do like what you said about, you know, not fully understanding quantum mechanics at the end of the semester. I think we've all been there. And if that makes you want to go into physics more, then that's a good sign. Got you into the field of research that you're working in?
Well, a lot of people ask me that question. And frankly, I did not choose it. When you go to a graduate school, right, you are in a PhD program, you are supposed to either do TA or research assistant to support yourself. And very often it's a mutual selection, right? You look around which professor is taking PhD student and And then professors will look around which student is available. And it's a selection process that very often the outcome may not be what you expected exactly. So when I went to MIT, just through word of mouth, right? Everyone say Professor Bertozzi is great. And he has a lot of Chinese students. And of course, as a Chinese student new to the United States, I talked to other Chinese students. And so I joined Professor Bertozzi's group from pretty much day one. And that is how I chose this field. By the way, this year, I'm very excited about the Nobel Prize in Chemistry. So one of my colleagues at UVA, who also was a former student of Professor Bertozzi at MIT, emailed me and say, have you seen the Nobel Prize in Chemistry this morning? So I checked out of the three people. The first one, her name is Caroline Bertozzi. Turns out she is the middle daughter of my PhD advisor, Bill Bertozzi. I joked that this is as close as I could get to a Nobel Prize as far as chemistry as possible.
That's really awesome.
In my
that's
life.
Really funny. I think that's good to hear. A lot of students think that they really need to know exactly where they want to go and what they want to do before they get to grad school. And I've heard that from a lot of professors who said, yeah, I took what I could get. Yeah. So outside of that, maybe I know you said the first obstacle was your father wanted you to do engineering instead of physics. Were there any other major obstacles or small obstacles that you had to overcome to get to where you are today?
Yeah, I can say something about that. Whenever I see this question about what obstacles did you overcome along the way, I think either I never had any obstacle or I was so naive. And even if I had those obstacles, I did not feel those. For example, even though my dad say you should do engineering, right? But when I said I wanted to do physics, he never said no. And my parents were always supportive of what I want to do. And sometimes people will comment, they'll be like, oh, you are a woman or you are a girl, you are doing physics. I never took it in a bad way. For me, I took it as a compliment. I would say, so what? And so again, I think there are certainly obstacles along the way, but I was so naive and oblivious to them that I never felt any.
I think that's an interesting outlook. Yeah, I've started talking to these professors and they say something similar, that these obstacles don't even feel like obstacles. They just push through them, you know? And I think that's how you get to where you are today. Another personal question, what do you like to do outside of work? Do you have any hobbies? How do you relax?
So I do have a dual career family. My husband is a physicist and he actually works at Jefferson Lab, and we do weekend commutes, and weekends are the only family times we have, and we have three children, but it's not really an obstacle to career. I would say it's more of a juggling issue, scheduling issue and juggling issue. How do I, you know, make sure that I do everything I need to do? Parent teacher conference activities, after school, weekends, music lessons, and all that. Yeah, two body problem is there, but a lot of people have it. Okay, so personal question, next one, special hobby. I have a lot of hobby. And of course, when I was in graduate school, I didn't have time to do anything. But I, you know, throughout these, I would say two decades in the field, right? I can count many hobbies. I can count running. Sometimes I will join a race, like a 10K, even a half marathon. I swim in the summer. I used to swim all year round until COVID and the gyms close. I like painting, but we used to have, there are three paintings here. There are two behind me on the blackboard. So we used to have a local paint bar and in the Charlottesville area. And I used to take my two sons there. My daughter was too young. So we'll go and paint the same thing three times, or three paintings, right, out of a session, or two paintings out of a session. And so that was lasted about 2 years. So I like painting. I actually liked very much art classes when I was in middle school, but very quickly we dropped all the art history and all that humanity classes because we are very targeted towards STEM. So the only thing I knew out of high school was math and physics. I also recently picked up gardening, mostly because of influence from my mom. I figured if I don't do gardening now, she will never see me doing gardening. So So that is a new hobby for this year.
But yeah, that's really good to hear about all the hobbies. I like hearing that, you know, as a professor and even one that's on all these committees, you know, you have time to stay active and stuff and stay creative. I definitely think that's inspiring. Yeah, and I think the last main question that I have is, what advice do you have for students and young researchers just in general?
I would say find a subject that you are passionate about and can get you a good job. That is what I tell all the first year students, because I do advising at UVA. I'm also teaching introductory physics. So most of my students are not physics majors. They are other majors. For me, obviously, I cannot expect everyone to be physics majors, but I suggest them, I say, if you're passionate about something, that should be your major. And I know I'm getting a little bit realistic here, but if you are passionate about something, but you cannot earn a salary to support yourself, that is not going to work, right? So, okay, let me rephrase this. So I would say you find something you are passionate about, and then you separate the ones that can get you a stable job and support yourself. So that will be your main career. What you are passionate about, but it's very hard to get a professional job out of it, that will be your hobby. For me, for example, I like swimming. I'm not really passionate about swimming, but I enjoy swimming. I enjoy running. So those are my hobby. You need both to have a balanced life.
Yeah, I like to hear that. Maybe one more question. Can you say a little bit more about, you know, just teaching these introductory courses and how that is? Because I know that's kind of part of, you know, inspiring the next generation of physicists. Is, you know, trying to rein some of those in that might not even be physics majors.
I mean, I'm also very passionate about teaching, and the introductory physics course we have here at the University of Virginia is sort of complicated, because you do have the intro physics for majors, and then you have the intro physics for engineers and pre-meds, right? And I have been teaching the intro physics for engineers. This is the fourth semester that I'm teaching, and I feel like I don't really care if they are going to pursue a physics major or not. Again, I cannot expect them to all pursue a physics major, but I try to convince them, or I try to teach them, that physics is a very logical and beautiful subject. So I will teach these courses almost the same as I teach physics majors. That is my philosophy. I want to show them why physics can be interesting and why I'm passionate about physics. Sometimes I even talk about my research in these introductory courses. And I try to make it fun as well. So instead of doing three lecture sessions each week, I will do two lecture sessions. And then I spend the third session to do what we call active learning or group collaborative learning activities. We'll have a sort of a difficult quiz, but the students can work in groups. And so this sort of ease a little bit of the tension here, the stress for first year students. And I found that they enjoy it quite a bit. And if they enjoy those collaborative learning activities, very often they start to enjoy physics rather than hating physics, which could be the case, right? And so I designed a course that in the first half of the semester, we do very physics-y quizzes. But then towards the second half of the semester, which is about now, I will start to put in some projects or applications. And this semester, for example, I'm going to invite graduate students from engineering school that I happen to know outside the classroom. And he's going to come in one of those sessions and discuss about his work experience, and he designed a quiz, and we're going to try out that quiz.
Yeah, I think you answered that well. Yeah, that's definitely interesting. I do like to hear professors that are actually interested in teaching. I know there's...
Oh, I love teaching.
Yeah, that's great. I think I'm about out of questions and getting close to being out of time. So thank you so much for coming, and thanks for coming, talking to us, and it's been great having you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. This podcast was created by Brian Stanley and Professor Huihuan Lin. Season 3 was interviewed by Bill Good and edited by Vara Lee Sikorkar. Thanks for listening.